and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. My name is Doobie, and I will be your host this week. And joining me today are Captain John.
Ahoy there, mateys.
My lovely and talented wife, Rebecca.
Hi.
And Fanboy.
Hey.
Fanboy is not here today.
Aww.
Sad to say that the young Mr. Boy is out in California. Well, we're sad for our sake. We're happy for him. Out in California enjoying the Finding Nemo submarine voyage.
And, which means Fantasmic is not operating.
That is a rule. If Fanboy's there, Fantasmic is not.
Which actually leads me to a question. Because when they designed Pirate's Lair, did they actually like have to make it Fantasmic friendly in a particular way? Because they sort of changed stuff around, didn't they?
In the Fantasmic stage, the
Captain Sparrow.
Yeah, the
fight
show
scene.
Stage, I think.
They just like.
They left that a stage.
They left that a stage, is how it works.
I think so, yeah.
I was just curious about that.
I'm sure they had to take it into deep consideration, though.
Yeah. So I wonder how much, like, whether or not the performance had to, like, sort of change its workings or whether or not they just sort of designed it right.
We'll never know because the show's not running. Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Let us know what you're thinking about whatever, including some of the topics we talk about today. Let's get started. And what? What's that? Fanboy is sort of here?
Hello, Rebecca B., Captain John. This is Fanboy reporting live on tape, I guess, or voicemail, whatever, from the Disneyland Resort in California. I'm here celebrating the opening of the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, as well as Pirate's Lair, and I just got to say, it is very exciting to be here. Everyone, there just seems to be an energy in the park, and it's great to see that. You know, Pirate's Lair, obviously, very popular, and those little rafts can't get a lot of people across that quick, and Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, everyone knows about the line challenges that's going to have, but, you know, regardless of length of line or other challenges an attraction has, when Disney builds attractions people are excited about, it doesn't really matter. I think of Soarin' at Epcot, where the thing always has a great, huge line, but people still like to go on it, and that seems to make everything work out in the end. I love both Pirate's Lair, which honestly I was very nervous about because I didn't really want something like classic like Tom Sawyer Island to just get overrun by what's popular of the day, but they did it very classy. I think it's a great improvement, and so I'm happy about that. And I also love the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage. There's just something special about the unique feature of walking down into those subs and staring out a porthole. It brought back so many memories. It definitely has the ability to become a classic attraction. The lines are long, but you know what? It's still fun to go on it. I think of Indiana Jones, how I waited forever for that one too, and so happy to get on it and enjoyed every minute of it. And similar thing with the submarine voyage. But anyway, I just thought I'd tell you what's going on here over at the other park, Disneyland, and I look forward to talking more about it next week.
Bad boy, are you okay? What happened?
I think he needs to put in another quarter.
Yes. Well, thanks for that, Fanboy, for the limited time you could contribute before you got yanked away so unceremoniously.
That's pretty funny.
He mentioned something I found interesting. You talked about the energy when an attraction opens. I mean, we've been to Disneyland many times when a new attraction is opening, whether it be Indiana Jones or even a new fireworks show. Well, you haven't?
I wasn't there for Indy.
Okay. And there is a definite energy there. I mean, more so than here, I think. I mean, if you compare, say, the fireworks shows out there when we were there as opposed to Everest here at Walt Disney World or even Soarin', I don't know. It just seems like it's different there. Maybe it's because there's so many locals who go to the park all the time and that new thing.
Yeah, I think it's a different type of excitement because here it's like, wow, there's an attraction open? We didn't know because we live in Ohio and we have no idea what's going on around here.
Exactly.
Whereas in California, everybody knows like everything about it like a year before it's built, and then you know they're anxious to see what it finally looks like. So yeah. It's sort of a different kind of excitement.
It's more of a community too. Mm-hmm. It's like you go on it, and then you want to know what all the other annual pass holders that you know what they think of it. You know, you want to go around and find out what everybody thinks of it. And I don't really have that yet here. There's not a core group of people that I really feel like I know. I mean, except for, weird enough, all the friends who have moved here since we have. you know, but I don't feel like there's that same, you know, oh, got to find out what X, Y, you know, what person X, Y, or Z that I see every day when I go to the parks thinks. Because these parks aren't, don't have that kind of community as visible as the smaller, more compact Southern California parks do.
And I think it may even be been a bigger deal with the Finding Nemo submarine voyage because it had very few soft openings. I think the cast member openings were just last week, and then a few days of AP and maybe a little bit of soft opening. But for the most part, no matter how in the know you were waiting until June 11th to get on the attraction like everybody mm-hmm. else. And the lines were the lines to get into the park, I saw pictures, extended way back to DCA, and then once you got in, the lines were just hours and hours to get on the attraction, and yet pretty much everything I've heard has been positive, both in terms of people's enjoyment of the attraction and being able to happily put up with the lines, because that's all a part of the experience at Disneyland.
I'm trying to remember the longest line I've waited in. Can you, I mean, do you have one? I mean, I get, the longest I can remember waiting for something is Fantasmic. But there you spread out a blanket,
yeah,
you
kind of
you claim your turf, and you play cards. Now, this is in California, not here in Florida, where they have you nicely organized on benches. But in California, you spread out your blanket, part of your group goes off and eats, then the second part of your group goes off and eat. You know, you can save space for quite a while. But I'm trying to think of an attraction where I waited a long. What can you remember?
Well, I started going to Disneyland in 1995, right around the time Indiana Jones opened. And I remember I did not care for it. For whatever reason, I didn't care about Indiana Jones. I didn't take the time to ride it. And then there was a group of people I hung out with back then, and on the 4th of July of all days, one of them finally convinced me to ride it. So after Fantasmic, late at night, I got in line for Indiana Jones finally and probably waited about 2 hours for it on the 4th of July. I think I finally got on at about 1 a.m., and it was worth it. I mean, yeah, it's maybe even more worth it. I don't know. There's something, and I was talking to Fanboy about this, there's something that makes a ride more enjoyable after you wait a while. When you walk on a ride or wait 10 minutes for a major ride, it's just not the same as when you put that investment in. Of it makes it even more enjoyable, I think.
How about you, Captain John?
The strange thing is I'm trying to, like, usually when the attractions open, I'm not usually there. So I'm just trying to remember. It's like the longest line probably would have been like 90 minutes for like some random attraction. But actually, come to think of it, I think Rocket Rods.
That's funny. I was thinking, as he was telling his story, I was thinking of Rocket Rods.
Rocket Rods.
I have to admit that that's kind of a fond memory. Is not necessarily the queue, but just the timing that we ended up with, because we got in line shortly before the park's scheduled closure.
Right.
And then we were in line probably an hour and a half to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So the park was pretty well emptied out except for the line of people who were waiting for Rocket Rods. So as you were zooming above the lit Tomorrowland with its, you know, neon and its green and blues and all that and soaring around there, there wasn't really anybody below, and so it was kind of a unique experience that, you know, we wouldn't have had had we not decided to go ahead and wait in the long line.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure some people out there will remember waiting in line for Star Tours. I can remember waiting 3.5 to 4 hours for Star Tours. I can remember getting in a 3-hour line for Star Tours.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's longer than the trip to Endor.
Yeah.
Real time,
yeah,
not
exactly.
Star Tours.
Yeah, no. So I can remember that, and I can remember waiting. I can remember when I used to have to wait in line for the Country Bear Jamboree in California. Not a long line. I'm not talking hours.
Like
but
more than a show's worth?
Yeah.
Really?
I can remember queuing up for it.
Yeah. California. Never here in California.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all. I used to go to that growing up. Maybe I didn't go to that growing up. In fact, I don't think my family knew that part of the park existed way back in the corner of Bear Country.
Another line story that comes to mind is one of those unfortunate circumstances that happens when there's soft openings. And that's where they open up the queue to the guests, but the attraction may or may not be operating continually. And it was Splash Mountain, and my family got in line. And we ended up waiting only a half an hour, but the people, or maybe an hour, but the people in front of us, their wait time was about twice as long, because shortly before we entered the queue, it had a long down period, and we happened to enter the queue just as they reopened it for an extended period of operations. So like, seriously, it was just the family directly in front of us had a much longer wait than we had. I'm guessing all the people behind them, you know, at some point bailed out during the time period where it was shut down. I mean, they would come around and let you know, you know, we've shut it, we're not sure if it will reopen. And, you know, California having a bunch of locals, it didn't, you know, it didn't matter. You didn't mind not going on other rides because you were right. waiting in this line. If you were visiting from Ohio and not going to be back again in a few years, you may not have taken that gamble. So I can remember that.
Because of our job now, we really have to ride an attraction as soon as we can. We mm-hmm. keep our ears open for soft openings and yeah. such. And we tend to get on rides before they officially open, whether it be through soft openings or through media openings. And, I mean, as strange as it is, I look back fondly on going to an attraction early in its life that's never been on, that you've only heard the new attraction is here, and getting in an hour-long line and waiting for that first ride. I mean, that is special, and I kind of miss it.
I've enjoyed the past few weeks where we've had a lot of out-of-town family, and we've kind of, and you haven't because you've worked and picked up my slack, but I got to go play with them, and it was fun to actually just kind of be a tourist and just go and, you know, wait in the queue and make that decision. Do I want to wait in the line? Do I not want to wait in the line? You know, as opposed to what we more often do, and that's where, oh, okay, we heard this is like Animal Kingdom right now. They've changed some of the dialogue on the safari, so it's going to be, okay, well, we got to go on the safari. And we know, you know, after you've been around long enough, you find out what's a good time to ride. I like to ride it just around parade time because the line, you know, can be pretty short. Although, the day I was there, the line was an hour to 90 minutes long the whole time. I never saw the line shorten. And then when we got up to the station, realized it was only one of the load areas was open. So I don't know, you know, what's going on. But, yeah.
Cool. Now, our guys, Doug Marsh and Dave Mastanich, were out for all the media events.
Doug and Dave.
DM and DM.
Oh,
think,
that's right.
Is what we call them.
Yeah, no, I call them Doug and Dave.
Because I'm DM as well, so we're like DM cubed.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's about as intelligent as that Mike and Mike and Mike and Mike commercial on ESPN.
Okay, you've definitely got me there. Sorry. They managed to get a couple interviews that we're going to play right now. First up is the former head of Pixar and now the big Mucky Muck in both the studios and Walt Disney Imagineering.
Mucky Muck.
That's his official title, I think, is the big Mucky Muck, John Lasseter.
John Lasseter, of course, is here today. And how do you feel about this attraction?
I love it. I love it. I grew up a half an hour from here, and the sub ride was always one of my favorite things. It meant so much to me as a kid. And now to bring it back with our characters, Finding Nemo, so that generations can experience what we all experienced growing up, I'm so excited. And I just got off. They just opened it. I rode the very, very, very first sub after it opened, and it was fantastic. It was great. It's beautiful. It's emotional. It's what Disney rides are the best, you know. And to sit there and everybody's going, how did they do it? And that's what makes it great. We're going to do a lot more of that.
Okay, well, thanks for stopping by and talking with us.
Thanks.
Thanks, Doug, and thanks very much, Mr. Lasseter.
He is so excited.
He is always excited. It's cool. If you look at the website, there's a lot of pictures of him. We had one on the front page yesterday
mm-hmm.
wearing a Finding Nemo hat. He with this Hawaiian shirt. He's such a big kid.
But it's just so much fun to have somebody at the events who's always so full of life. You know, because when you think of Walt Disney and everything that he did and, you know, the way he would share what was upcoming on the, you know, the Disneyland program, there was always this energy, this excitement about it, you know, and it's just cool to have that. I mean, I know you also had to have your businessmen, but it's nice to have that storyteller enthusiasm there, too.
That's definitely what John Lasseter.
Yes, indeed.
Brings to the company. Our next interview is Doug Marsh interviewing one of the legendary figures of Disney Imagineering and one of the top creative executives now, Marty Sklar.
We're pleased to have Marty Sklar here. You, of course, were here in 1959 for the first big opening.
Oh, yeah. This is even more exciting than that, though.
So you feel this is as big or bigger?
Well, you know, these days we have so many more tools to use, and that old line I wrote for Walt about the Imagineering being the blending of greater imagination with technical know-how, and the technical know-how keeps giving us more opportunities to create new and wonderful things for our guests here.
Now, this morning there was a big presentation on upcoming things. What do you think is most exciting that we can be seeing around the corner?
Probably something we haven't told you about. But I think the Midway Mania, the Toy Story Mania, is really going to be exciting. Using technology in a way that's never been used before. And that's so much about what Imaginary does for the park.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by and talking to us today.
Anytime. Thank you.
That was so cool. Did you hear that in the background?
The whistle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know,
I didn't even hear it.
When I heard that, I was like, aw. I didn't even think about, you know, whether or not that would be back. But, yeah, you used to hear that every, you know, so many minutes while you were waiting in the queue for a submarine voyage. Oh, I'm so glad the whistle's back.
Do you think that was cool. I'm glad you pointed that out. I didn't even notice. But, you know, something that Marty said that reminded me of something, I don't know if you remember, but a long time ago, we interviewed someone named Tim O'Day.
Okay.
And he told us how important it was to get the names right.
Okay.
The legal people come up with the name of the attraction, and you use the name of the attraction.
Yes,
and the person who taught him that was
Marty
Sklar.
Uh-huh.
And then in this interview, Marty Sklar goes, Toy Story Mania or Midway Mania. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
I wonder if it's still up for debate.
From what I've heard, it's certainly settled here at MGM Studios, which is where they made the announcement, Toy Story Mania.
Uh-huh.
But maybe not so settled in California. After all, it's going on a Midway,
in
California. So it may not be settled there, but... That just reminded me of the Tim O'Day interview, and that was very funny.
Oh, to hear the little impish nature in Marty and Mr. Sklar's voice when he was like, "Well, something we may not have even told you about yet." That's just how fun, because he knows that we're all sitting on the edge of our seats, always waiting. You know what's around the corner. So to just dangle that there. That was cool. That was fun.
Thanks so much, Marty. And then. After talking to Marty, Doug ran into one more person and got their opinion of the subs.
So how was Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage?
It was really goofy.
And do you remember the old sub?
Sure.
And how does this compare?
Even better.
Thank you.
Well, I wonder who that was.
Yeah, it was nice to see him get a chance to get on the subs early and give us his opinion. It was pretty goofy.
I didn't realize that they had that tall of a ceiling. I bet he had to kind of scrunch down pretty. Maybe he took his hat off,
yeah,
too.
Well, he'd have to take his hat off.
It's
and
goofy.
Those shoes. Can you imagine those shoes going down that staircase? Does it still spiral?
It's the same. I've seen pictures. I'm just imagining what it was like sitting in there with one leg over his head and another one behind another chair. No wonder it was so goofy.
But with those bright colors, he would do well with the surroundings, because that attraction, all the pictures, I don't know if you've seen them, Captain John, but that thing is like psychedelic.
Psychedelic?
It is so bright with the colors.
And
the blues and the oranges
even
and
inside,
the greens.
Like inside?
I haven't seen as many inside, but just the exterior pictures of the sub lagoon, the colors really pop.
And the sub itself is a really bright, bright,
bright,
bright
yellow.
Yellow,
yeah, I saw that. And I also saw they painted the monorail like a submarine, too.
That was cool.
That was funny.
I thought that was cool.
That was cute.
Yeah.
I thought that was cute. Another thing, I don't know if you guys had read, but they didn't use paint this time or something. They used like some sort of environmentally friendly materials to create the bright colors and whatnot that are used in there, as opposed to a certain type of paint.
I don't use clownfish extract and
no. It was some sort of ecologically they handled it in an ecologically friendly manner. It was but it was just cool, because I was looking at the colors going, wow, those are pretty bright. You know, I'm guessing they're worried about the sun making the paint fade or whatever. But then to hear that it was actually a new process, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty neat.
I thought it was cool that, you know, obviously the submarines were a focus of the opening, which originally opened in 1959, and then they brought in the monorail and made it look like a sub, and that also opened in 1959. And then at the media party the night before, I saw some video of a lot of lights on the Matterhorn, and so I kind of forced that in, because that also opened in 1959. So it was kind of a celebration of 1959 minus the Junior Autopia.
They're partying like it's 1959.
Was that this TV special that had the spaceman? Or was that later? Do you know?
I am not sure.
I am most definitely
I used
not
to
sure.
know.
You're losing it, Captain.
I'm losing it.
Well, thanks, Fanboy, for calling in. Thanks, Doug, for getting those interviews with John Lasseter and Marty Sklar and the Goofster himself. In other big news, Disney / Pixar has a huge release coming out next week called Ratatouille.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. And Rebecca's going to talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's the story of a rat.
Thank you. Our next story today.
Well, it's actually it's a beautifully created film from all the footage that's been making its way around the net now, and the there was a sneak peek of it in the Texas area, which Ain't It Cool News has some reviews, and they're all the one I saw was glowing. It was a glowing review, but Wall Street apparently isn't expecting much of it. Box office wise, I shouldn't say much of it. They just seem to, a lot of the reports I'm reading seem to expect it to not quite do as well as past Pixar films. So I don't know.
What do you think?
Well, it's funny because here I'll quote from this Business Week article that was posted yesterday, and they're talking about how the 2006 film Cars was considered a modest disappointment because it fell short of the $631 million that Incredibles grossed 2 years earlier and was well short of Nemo's $864 million worldwide. But Cars, as they point out, went on to sell tons more merchandise than was originally expected. I'm wondering if this film's going to be the opposite. I'm wondering if it's going to gross more in the theaters than Wall Street is expecting, but maybe merchandise sales won't be as strong because I don't know that I see the same marketability of the characters for this film as there was for Cars.
That's the one thing is that even like before Cars came out, like you'd see kids like, you know, immediately like recognizing characters just like from the previews, and there hasn't been as much recognition or appeal from this. So I'm not sure if that means, if that really means anything at all. I mean, I'm not sure how it works, but.
Well, it's funny. Yahoo, in their buzz log, they point out that this is among the most least searched for films of the summer. I think it's like number 19 of the top 20.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's funny. I was wondering myself, and I saw another blogger. I can't remember which one, unfortunately, but also wondered if maybe people just don't know how to spell Ratatouille.
Right, yeah.
And that can be, you know, leading to some of that. But I don't know. It's got tough competition because the week after Ratatouille opens, you've got Transformers. And then is it 2 weeks later is Harry Potter after Ratatouille? Or is it that same weekend? No.
It's after.
Another weekend. And then late in July, just a few weeks after, is yet another animated film, and that's The Simpsons. So, I mean,
the one thing about all those movies mentioned is that they all have different audiences, I think, than Ratatouille does. I think. I mean, Harry Potter maybe, but Harry Potter is not exactly as kid-friendly as it was before.
Right. Certainly not The Simpsons either. But still, they're all, to an extent at least, family movies, and
right.
There's only so much, especially this year, there's a lot of talk in the industry this year about how just people aren't going to the movies as much, and they're certainly not seeing stuff multiple times as much, and they're being a little more choosy this year.
And some are bringing it back to the rapid release of the DVD, because when you take into account the cost of taking your whole family to the movies, along with the various, you know, food and beverages that usually go along with that, and balance that against the cost of a DVD, when families have incredible home theater systems available to them in some cases, you know, when push comes to shove, they may take the convenience of the home experience over the theater.
Time magazine had a big Ratatouille article as well, very glowing. Recommend you read it. But they picked up something similar to what you were talking about, in that they didn't feel that the movie may not be as marketable as other movies. For example, they say, then there are the marketing tie-ins, which reap extra cash and free promotion. As Ratatouille producer Brad Lewis asked with the rhetorical flourish, what food company would want a tie-in with the movie about a rat? You know, that's a good point. You're not necessarily going to go to Burger King and pick up your rat toy.
Right, yeah.
I don't know though, because the other characters in the film are cute. Linguini, the chef that Remy assists, and Colette, the young chef who it appears Linguini is trying to. I suspect she may prove to be a little bit of a romance. I don't know, but
for Remy or
no, for Linguini.
Okay.
And then there's the little guy who is the head chef. I don't know what the official title is. I'm not very good with kitchen dynamics. But he seems like he has a very big personality that, you know, could provide some fun, you know, gadgets or toys.
I believe that's the chef that prepares the pet apéritifs.
Oh, is that what you think?
I believe that's what Fanboy let me know.
Yeah, you love that word.
It's funny, though, in the next paragraph in that Time article, it says the burger franchises should rethink their reluctance because the food in Ratatouille looks real enough to eat and to savor. Credit this to Sharon Callahan, director of photography. I knew we'd need a bigger toolkit to pull off food, says the artist technician. Wet grapes and dry grapes have different kinds of translucences. Liquids and sauces are hard. Bread was a big challenge because of its porous nature. Are you not looking forward to just... you're going to get a big thing of popcorn when you see this movie because you know your stomach's just going to be growling from the yummy, yummy food.
Oh, totally. I also read some of the Pixar animators talking about the difficulty in capturing the right color green for lettuce because you have, good lettuce, healthy lettuce is supposed to look like, and so you have to make sure that that's what's conveyed. And they also talked about the difficulty in there's, you know, obviously it's a story about sewer rats, so you're going to have some rotting food as well. Well, you have to make sure that you capture that well.
No, you don't.
So,
it's okay not to get that.
Did you know that this film has an official chef?
No.
Yeah, Thomas Keller from the, I believe it's a Napa Valley area. Restaurant Yountville, I think, is the name of the place, and I associate that with the Napa area. Oh, it is the Napa area. Yay. Okay. he was the chef that they consulted on the film, and he did a lot of food preparation that the animators would watch, and then use that in the recreation of the scenes that of Remy and the various other characters preparing food. And he actually prepares a special dish just for this film, and he came up with it. He created it, and there's an article in the New York Times with Chef Keller, where he talks about the way in which that special dish came about and the role that it plays in the film. And it was fun to hear that. I wonder if they'll give out like a little recipe card for the Ratatouille dish, you know.
That'd be fun. That would be cool.
It would be cool if people realize Ratatouille is not the name of the mouse, but is a type of dish. Otherwise, people think it's a recipe for cooking the little mouse, and I'm not sure that's the best thing to convey.
I suspect that once you've watched the film, you'll know Remy versus Ratatouille.
Yeah, going in, I mean, if you got that card on the way in, how to make Ratatouille, I could see some kids jumping.
No, well, you're right.
But whether or not Ratatouille is the dish is the question, though. Is that like the trademark dish of the movie?
I would hope so. What's the name of the movie?
I mean, it might just be related to rat and food.
Go to Ratatouille to find out how to make French fries.
But yeah, the food in this film, all the images of the food in this film are simply amazing. And
just like in general, the way it looks is like really amazing. Like just the animators have outdone themselves this time.
And I have to admit, I've softened a bit towards Remy in close-up. He's cute in close-up, but I'm not sure. Those scenes when he's kind of scampering off in the... they're too good.
He's too ratty.
Yeah, he's ratty. Too ratty. He's but too ratty. When he's up close and, you know, his little face and maybe, we'll see. We'll see. I'm still worried I'm going to be picking at my feet expecting, like, a Honey, I Shrunk the Audience experience every now and then.
It's funny because you know what Remy actually eats is jelly beans, boogers, and pizza.
Ew.
I need Fanboy.
Yeah, you do because I'm a girl.
And what am I?
Oh, good point.
I didn't find it particularly funny.
Oh,
either,
well,
so.
Then you're wrong. That's why I said I need Fanboy.
But it's interesting. Disney is doing a good job, I think, of getting the word out about the film. They have the roaming display that's going to the various food festivals, which, considering the beauty and artistry of the film and the topic, I think that that's a good market for the film. And then you've also got the sneak peek, which is this Saturday, June 16th. And there's a lot of theaters around the nation that are going to be having a showing. I know here in Central Florida, it's a 7 p.m. showing at area theaters. And that'll be helpful because that'll, you know, people will go see that. And then the word will start to build before the movie is actually out. You know, so a little word of mouth work, you know, that's cool. So I'm looking forward to it doing well. I just don't know that it's going to do as well as previous. I think sometimes because of Pixar's stellar success in the past, people have really big expectations for the film. And I just don't know that its box office is going to be that powerful.
Time will tell. And speaking of time, as we all know, this year marked the 30th anniversary of the release of the epic Star Wars back in 1977. And we got an email regarding that and Disney Star Tours that I'm going to read, and it's going to take us into some armchair imagineering. Mark in Boyertown, Pennsylvania writes, "Hi gang, just wanted to toss my ideas for the Star Tours upgrade over to you guys. Honestly, I thought Disney kind of dropped the ball on this one, especially since we're in the heart of Star Wars' 30th anniversary. I think it's about time that the ride be updated to accommodate modern technology, the film quality, a plasma or LCD screen, the latest THS surround sound, as well as implementing visuals from more of the films. It would be amazing if Star Tours really was more like the Q posters promote. My idea isn't just for one static experience, but multiple depending on which Starspeeder 3000 you board. Maybe one would take you to Hoth, another to Dagobah, another to Tatooine. And now that the prequel trilogy is done, we can visit, here's a good one, Coruscant, Naboo, Mustafar, and any of the other locations. You could drop in to such scenes as the pod race, the bounty hunter chase through the sky streets of Coruscant, the mines of Mustafar, the speeder bike chase on Endor, etc. It wouldn't be that terribly expensive to do the upgrade. I'm surprised Lucas hasn't cried for it already. Anyway, that's my thought for the day. Keep up the great work." And thank you, Mark. Captain?
Well, when it comes to Coruscant, see, George Lucas calls it Coruscant, but in the movies they call it Coruscant for the silent sea.
Oh, good. I feel better.
So it's sort of funny how that works.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree with everything right there. I mean, simply enough, it all makes sense to me, and I'm surprised that they didn't try to tie it in with, I mean, it's been the general thing that people have been sort of crying for an upgrade for years and years.
Well, the ride is, what, 20 years old, so I think they've been crying for an upgrade for about 18 now.
So, yeah. But when it comes to, I'd probably take it an extra step and even upgrade the pod itself. Really, because in comparison to other simulators I've ridden, like in comparison to like Wild Arctic and San Diego SeaWorld, I mean, it feels old.
Really?
Even in that regard. I mean, not just the movie. I'd give it like a general update. Because it's even though like it fits Star Wars and everything, it actually sort of feels dated when you go to it. I'm not entirely sure why. I mean, Star Wars sort of has a dated feel, almost sort of. But I mean, I'm not sure whether or not they'd want to make it more prequely and more, you know, eye candy like, or whether or not they'd want to keep it more of the retro Star Wars feel is the question.
You know what scares me is the way a lot of the simulators I've been on, the smaller ones like, say, in Las Vegas, rely heavily on CGI, and you can tell. Whereas Star Tours, and maybe I'm wrong, but is that all computer, or is that a bunch of models
models, to my knowledge.
That's what I would think from back in '87, and it doesn't look CGI, and that's kind of cool. I don't know. There's something about simulators that when they're CGI, they look cheesy, as opposed to Star Tours. So if they do upgrade it to make it look as modern as like the new Star Wars movies, I mean, I think they really need to make sure they put the money into it to make it state of the art and not the more cheesy stuff you get elsewhere.
I mean, I'd hope they'd want to, you know, get in touch with ILM and they would probably do it justice, I'd figure.
Well, there have been rumors circulating on the net that Anthony Daniels, the voice of C-3PO, has said that he recorded new dialogue for an upcoming Star Wars movie
thing
for a theme park or something really generic along those lines. And I know he's scheduled for Star Wars weekends, I think, in 2 weeks. So I suspect some
we're gonna go there.
Yeah,
we're gonna...
so some Disney fan will be there to ask him, "Hey, what's up?" So you know, maybe that's once again. I mean, this is a rumor that's gone. You know, we've heard
forever.
Do you remember
forever.
That time that we saw those big canisters?
Yes.
Oh, this is the best. I don't know. Maybe we've shared this story.
I think we mentioned this on
the
show before.
That we were at the Grand Californian Hotel and we saw George Lucas, and then later that same week, it was like that was during the week, and then that weekend we saw a cart being pushed through the hotel that had these giant film canisters that said, like, Star Tours 2 on them.
Yep.
And so, boy, we were, you know, just thinking the announcement was right around the corner. Uh-huh. And here we are many years later.
See, really, that was
nothing.
Just a shipment for a replacement reel of the
old one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, who knows? Who knows what that was? But I agree. First of all, I was shocked when this didn't happen, when the prequels came. I was really surprised because I thought, you know, Disney and Lucas would build off of that. And that didn't happen. And then now with the 30th anniversary, I thought maybe we'd get an announcement because they, you know, use this momentum moving forward and, you know, but still nothing. So I have to admit, I too, like Mark, am very surprised that we haven't, you know, heard any official announcement of something happening over there in the Star Tours Pavilion. But operationally, having the different star speeders go to different places would be a very tough thing. Right. I think you'd start to reduce its capacity in a major, make it more like a submarine voyage wait time. I don't know, but I'm just thinking.
Whether or not you pick where you go would be the, I mean, like Mission Space right now, you could pick between the green room or the orange room or whatever it is. And I guess it would work the same way where you just sort of split off and each pod would take you to a particular place. It's not like it would change, like. The pod would stay the same thing.
No, I realize that, but I'm just saying, let's say that Naboo is four times more popular than Endor.
Right.
You know, you could run into operational issues there, and the pavilion itself currently I don't think is designed to be able to handle four or five different queues on your pod.
I mean, you could just make it random, though. I mean,
yeah, but then you deal with guest satisfaction and guest disappointment. Oh, the last 28 times I came, I got Coruscant.
The nice thing here, I think at Disney World, it might be harder at Disneyland. At Disney World, you could get away with it. I mean, it's like riding in the front of the car. If someone asks, then let them go. Otherwise, just send them to a place. And here at Disney World, anyway, I think most people would be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, in California, it'd be a much different story in that regard.
So they can keep the one they've got.
But I like the idea of new places. I like the idea of having some of the newer places, too, the Naboo and
would
whatnot,
you,
not only the other one.
Would you keep the pilot?
No.
Yeah. You got to have Rex.
No.
But would you keep Rex, or would you replace it with somebody else? Would you have it like as like an actual character you may recognize?
Mm-mm. I'd leave it an unknown character, but I'd redo the voice.
I think I would take one of the animatronics from one of the old Pirates animatronics and move it over and make it the new figure.
And, like, take off all the skin and stuff and just sort of leave it there?
Exactly. That's the way I would go.
Maybe they could resurrect that critter from Alien Encounter.
Oh,
Skippy. Bring Skippy.
Skippy should host Star Tours.
Skippy
should be
your
pilot.
your Star Tours pilot.
That's a cool idea. Captain, do you know, because he mentions maybe using some footage from the newer Star Wars films, do you know, is there footage, actual footage from the Star Wars films in the original Star Tours as opposed to just all recreated?
I'm not entirely sure. I could easily believe that they use the Death Star footage from the original stuff, because they had to put all the ships in afterwards, so I'm sure they could have just taken the background plate for that and just put it in, but I really don't know.
Okay. That's curious.
That makes it where, if they redid it, it would be sort of easier these days, because I'm sure that with all the CG settings for the new films, they probably still have them on a hard drive somewhere, and they could just, you know, program the camera again.
That's something I wonder about. I wish I understood. Mark says in his email, it wouldn't be that terribly expensive to do the upgrade, and I just find that hard to believe. Logically, especially with what you just said, maybe, but considering what a smash this would be and the fact that they haven't done it, I really think this is just a much bigger deal than a lot of us think.
I'm sure it's trickier to get the, you know, George Lucas and, you know, the team just on board with it. I mean, they still have things to do, so.
What's he doing?
I can't say, you know. he and I are real close, you know.
Okay.
Gotta keep a secret.
All right. Gotta have a disguise.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
See you later, trash can.
Oh, dude, that's a totally different.
George Lucas, it's not that. No, wait, that was.
Nope, it wasn't.
Francis Ford Coppola. Never mind. Sorry, George. Wouldn't want to. Yeah.
See, that's why I'm close to him and you're not. Right there.
He won't let me get that close to him. We're going in. Anyway.
The ideas that he tossed out, though, for the different experiences you could have are a lot of fun. I mean, imagine you're in a star speeder, you're on your way to, you know, a planet, and all of a sudden you're caught in the middle of some you know, battle between the bounty hunter and Obi-Wan or somebody. And
right. There
you are, you're zooming around and you're trying to get away, and the bounty hunter, and they can use those sonic boom things that were so cool.
Right. You know, that's the one thing that with the current Star Tours, like, really, isn't, like, C-3PO, like, the only character that actually shows up? I mean, isn't it just, like, the random pilot guy who talks to you? I mean, does anybody actually show up from the movies?
R2-D2.
So the droids do. So, I mean, in this case, like, with the bounty hunters and stuff, you could actually incorporate more of the familiar territory like that. If they wanted to. I mean, I'm sure they could invent new characters to put in or whatever.
I wonder why they did that. Like in Muppets, where they have the 3D thing they create, and Rex and Star Tours. Why would in things that have such recognizable characters, they make a point of making a new character be the central character instead of something people are already familiar with?
It just makes it more unique. You know, you'll remember the random droid that got you lost on the Star Tours ride when you come back home, rather than, yeah, I saw Luke Skywalker. Well, you could have just put in your, you could have just gone to the movies and seen him.
Okay.
I think it's more of the uniqueness behind it.
Okay.
Like Figment. You've got Figment.
But Figment, he's not in a ride with other recognizable characters, though they're all new characters.
True.
It's not like you create the Indiana Jones adventure and stick, you know, Explorer Joe in there instead.
Well, but you have Mara, who didn't exist in a movie.
All right, so you win.
I'd forgotten. I checked out Wikipedia while you guys were chatting. I'd forgotten that back in 2005, Lucas had confirmed that a Star Tours 2 is in production, I guess at the Star Wars Celebration convention thing. I'd forgotten that that's been said. And it says, a citation is needed, so that means it's unsourced, but a concept release, the sequel is described as being based on the pod racer sequence in Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. The new ride system will consist of glasses-free, 3D, high-definition screen, and improved motion simulation. But that reminds me that shortly after that happened, with the celebration of Disneyland and everything, they had the map. Remember the Disneyland map? And it had that picture of the pod racer on it. You remember that?
I do remember that.
So, wow, these rumors have been around for quite a while.
Oh, yeah, since 2 years.
Some of them aren't even quite rumors, it seems. They're sort of like, there's something really strange going on behind the scenes,
like,
here.
Like, on again, off again. Or maybe it's one of those things where they came up with, like Space Mountain, where they came up with this great idea, but the technology isn't quite there yet to make it happen, so it'll be a few years before we see it.
You know what they need to really do to get this thing going? Start digging.
Oh, and then they'll find it.
They'll find it, yeah.
It will have been there the whole time.
The whole time. So pull out your shovel. Captain, what you got?
All right. Here's a question for those sitting in this room, including Happy the dog. But he's asleep, so I'm not sure if he really minds. All right. When did Star Tours open in Anaheim, California?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes.
1987.
You are correct, but credibility. What did it replace?
It replaced Adventure Through Inner Space.
Yes.
Monsanto ride. You can still see the Mighty Microscope in the attraction.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you can. When? When do you see the Mighty Microscope? At what point in the attraction?
When you're launching, and it kind of comes in front of you.
When you go, you know, wrong way, and then you drop down. You drop down into, like, this yellow lit room, and you can see it on the right-hand side.
Bay, when you're in the maintenance bay on the lower right-hand side.
I remember the 30-hour party like it was yesterday.
You weren't there. You weren't a fan yet.
I don't remember yesterday too well.
But you weren't a fan yet, because you started in 95.
Yeah, no, I wasn't there at all.
Yeah.
All right, now here's a question for all you listeners out there.
Well, what about last week's question for all you listeners out there?
I'll get to that. I'll answer really? That after I...
Good time, huh?
What?
In your own good time.
Yeah, my own good time.
I should just shut up.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Yeah, all right. I'm the captain, you're the guy. All right. Here we go. Who supplied the voice for Rex in Star Tours?
Ding, 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 ding.
This happens every time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This is not for you.
Okay.
All right. Now, Fanboy asked a question last week. I'm trying to remember what it was. Haley Joel Osment's sister, she has a role in a Disney production, and what was that? Do you have your... Any ideas?
Because I am a dedicated reader of our discussion boards, I happen to know the answer.
Ooh, all right. Well?
I don't want to take credit.
You don't want to take... Okay. No. Pirate Princess, surprisingly enough, as it seems. Let me see. All right, yeah, I have one page. Pirate Princess again. Haley Joel Osment's sister is Emily Osment, and she plays Hannah Montana's best friend, Lily.
I'd just like to add that Pirate Princess posted that answer approximately 1 hour after the podcast went up, I believe. And considering it's an hour-long podcast, that's pretty impressive.
That's some dedication right there.
Let's see. UK fan, I believe, got it. Oh, no, he didn't. Retlaw fan got it. Hista98 got it. Thank y'all for playing.
All right. So.
Who does the voice of Rex? That's what we want to know.
Who does the voice of Rex, yes.
Well, thank you for tuning in this week. Thanks again to all our contributors. Thanks to Fanboy for not being here and giving us a break. Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Before we go this week, I would like to go around the table and get a final word from Fanboy. Ha ha, nothing. Rebecca?
For those Star Wars fans out there who can't make it all the way to Florida during Star Wars weekends, be sure to visit StarWarsDisneyland.com and learn about the third annual unofficial Star Wars Fan Day at Disneyland. It's going to be held June 30th. A group of Star Wars fans who get together and in some way protest the fact that Disneyland doesn't host Star Wars events out there. But they have fun. They get together. They take a big group picture. I also know that they have, over the years, sold some pretty clever Disney Star Wars T-shirts that they use the funds to donate the money to American Cancer Society. So if you're in the Southern California area, Star Wars fan, June 30th, you can get together with a bunch of other Star Wars geeks and have a good time. I know I'd stop by if I lived out there, but instead I'll be here at Star Wars Weekends.
Yeah, I'm glad we're not there then. Captain?
On the same note with Star Wars, somehow I have not managed to get to a Star Wars weekend this year. I don't know how that manages to work out.
Do you think you will? You got time.
Yeah, I'll have to get over there.
We're planning to
like
go
Star
on
Wars
Sunday.
Weekends. All right, I'll have to hitchhike.
We'll give you a call.
What I really wanted to mention was, it was funny, like, I remember way back when, with the Finding Nemo submarine, they were making a big deal how Big Blue World, it's like, we incorporated the song into the ride and everything. And it's not in there. Dun dun dun.
That's funny.
It's very it's very amusing.
Oh, I love that song. Well, maybe it's
I'm
not
a big
such
fan
a,
of that song.
So
you can buy that song on iTunes.
Yeah, the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not such a big
so
blue
so rather
world
than
there.
The Big Blue World, you get eaten by a whale. Now I guess is how it works.
don't ruin the attraction for me.
Yeah, it's
you get eaten. Never mind.
Does it happen on this ride?
What?
They have the whale in the
ride?
Yeah,
they have the whale in the ride.
Oh, cool, because nowhere else has it. The show, yeah. The musical doesn't have the whale part. The Epcot
attraction
doesn't have the whale part.
I'm not sure if there's
any
whale speaking, but there's a whale in the ride.
That's cool. Oh, I'm glad there's a whale.
There's a whale.
Do you know if they still have a reference to Mr. Baxter in the ride? Is that a no?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. Curious.
They have a reference to the sea serpent, too.
I heard that.
So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, for those of you listening, we want to know, as people who won't be able to go to the attraction until probably Christmas time, we'd like to know, is there a reference to Mr. Baxter as there used to be in the classic? Do you remember what the old quote was? It was something about the...
I don't.
How many fathoms down, or the radar scope mystery. It was just a command that... It was just the captain calling out a command to one of the invisible workers on the sub, and Mr. Baxter...
Yeah, that's all I remember, not specifics. But anyway, this past weekend, or was it last week? No, it was last Friday. The bunch of us went out to Kennedy Space Center,
yep.
To the visitors complex, and got to see the space shuttle launch from an area where you don't actually see the shuttle itself, but you're about 5 miles away or so?
You don't see the launch pad.
Yeah, you can't see the launch pad, but you see it.
So you don't see the shuttle launch at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, but you watch a little TV.
No. It's
you see,
awesome.
You don't see the shuttle launch pad, but you do see the launch probably about 5 seconds after it gets off the ground. And you're
just after it passes the tree line.
Right, you're quite close, and it's loud, and it's amazing. It's not even dark yet. It lights up the sky. It's hard to look at. It was a great experience. I recommend it to anyone in the Central Florida area to, if you have the chance to see a shuttle launch, get out there. Find an alternate way home. Don't take the standard tourist route if you can all figure out another way, because it took us about 4 hours to get back.
It's a 45-minute drive there, but but it took us about 4.5 hours to get back.
Because of the people, not only at Kennedy, obviously, but it's a huge event in the area, and people just go all over the place in the area to watch it. And then they're all coming back to the same place. So that part of it's a challenge, but it was well worth it. If you get a chance to get out to anywhere in the area and see the space shuttle launch while you're here, highly, highly recommend it. A wonderful experience.
And if you happen to be here during a shuttle launch but don't want to head all the way out to Kennedy, you can see it from Disney property. And it's a beautiful sight from there.
If you're in Epcot, look towards Mission Space, and you can see it appear right behind it.
It's actually
steaming.
In 1982, when they designed Epcot, it was with the thought that Mission Space would go there and the shuttle would launch behind it. So,
I know we've seen shuttle launches now from the Grand Floridian's Citrico's restaurant.
Didn't even know that one was happening.
We saw a Atlas V launch while we were at, or maybe it was a Delta Rocket launch while we were at Epcot, and watched it, you know, launch off behind Mission Space. And now we've been over to Kennedy, and it was amazing. Like Doobie said, we didn't see the actual launch pad itself, but as soon as the rocket passes the tree line, it's a bright, you can't hardly look at it. It reminds me of that moment in Fantasmic with the witch's cauldron, where it just illuminates and is like, whoa, and your eyes kind of burn. And then what was really impressive to me was the sound, because you're far enough away that you see it well before you hear it. And it's this low rumbling in the distance that keeps getting closer and closer. And I seriously was getting scared, because it seemed like it was building something really loud. But it didn't build anything quite as loud as I expected, which I'm glad of. But it was very cool. And
you
then,
could feel
and
it,
then,
so it was like beating on you.
And then where we were, they had an astronaut who had been on previous missions, and he talked about his memories leading up to the launch. And so it was a really pleasant, I mean, we waited for a couple of hours in some bleachers out in the hot sun, but you didn't really notice it because they kept you pretty well entertained out there at the visitor center. And what's really nice is the visitor center, it's not any additional fee over the normal cost of admission. And you get to use that ticket one other day within a 7-day time period. So you go,
we want to go back and see the vacuum cleaner vertical ride.
Yeah, so now we're going to go back and check out the stuff that we didn't quite have time for, because we're there to see the shuttle launch. I want to see an IMAX film, and I want to do the new shuttle experience.
Yeah, if you didn't know, the shuttle launch experience, there's a new attraction over at Kennedy.
And we'll be talking about it soon, because we're going to go experience
it. Go tomorrow. Well, thanks for joining us this week on the Laughing Place podcast. We will see you again next week, and until then, may the force be with you.
Sevi.